Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Sara Gone Rogue, your weekly look at politics, local, national, and international. And the interview this week, we will be talking about local political issues, and more specifically about gender write-offs in the Johannesburg City Council. And they raised a few questions that I came across in an article. You will see that, as is customary at this time of the year, the ANC holds a birthday party, and this was its 114th birthday party, which apparently started being held before it was unbanned, to kind of remind everyone that the force of the ANC was there, even if it was not represented in government. And I don't know, maybe I'm being a bit unfair to take the view that you reach a point, particularly if you've been the governing party for 30 years, that celebrating or commemorating your birthday as a sort of a public exercise is a little bit sort of naff, I don't know, but perhaps it's intended to signal the political tenor of the year before politics is sort of really communicated in terms of what's happening, both with reference to the ANC and to the other political parties and governance on a broader scale. But they set out, as they tend to do, their six priorities for 2026. And have a listen to the priorities and see what you think about them. The first, fixing local government and improving basic services, speeding up economic transformation, inclusive growth and job creation, waging war on crime and corruption and gender-based violence and femicide as a national disaster, building a South Africa that belongs to all through the national dialogue and the 30th anniversary of the Constitution, making organizational renewal visible and irreversible, and building a better Africa and a better world. Now, other than being very broad statements as to what they're going to do, it's essentially a repeat of their priorities for every year that I can offhand think about. And fixing local government should become a particular area of emphasis, of course, because this year or early next year, we'll be having local government elections, which will probably be one of the most significant elections we will have had in a number of years, because there's generally a view, and I've referred to this before, that the ANC is not doing anything to really start to win back or attract people that it has finally started to lose the support of, because it has not been seen to be doing or achieving much in any of the areas that it has said that it is going to concentrate on. So we'll have to see which way they go on fixing local government, but we have a huge number of local governments that are not functioning properly and need injections of skills and finance, and improving basic services. Let's get some idea, you know, all around what they mean by these proposals, and the very broadness of them, and the, dare I say it, you know, been there, done that, just strikes me as, you know, there's nothing the ANC is promising to do better or different in the coming year.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Now, there seems to be a controversy occurring in eThekwini or Durban over the fact that the mayor has defended the erection of two 22 million rand statues, one of Nelson Mandela and one of Oliver Tambo, on a couple of sites in Durban that are supposed to make Durban or create a more interesting aspect to what Durban has to offer and what Durban is. Now, they're bronze statues, and they're about 9 meters tall. Now, 9 meters is very, very tall, so they're going to stand up really like sore thumbs. And I don't know if you've seen any photographs of either of these statues. They're sort of wrapped up, but they're wrapped up so that you know that there's a figure behind them. You may, to some extent, if you have any sense, you'll be able to tell which figure they are. And there's been a huge amount of criticism over this 22 million rand commission and regarding it as vanity spending, particularly in an area where the provision of water, sewage failures and potholes is a dominant feature of daily life in the Durban metro and surrounding areas. Now, the mayor, Cyril Gqaba, is adamant that the two statues will be unveiled soon, although to an extent, you know, their very existence now is a rather strange blot on the figure of Durban. They were installed in August and they've been standing, so why they have not been uncovered sooner, I don't know. Apparently they were meant to glorify the two struggle heroes, enhanced city tourism's offering, and basically in an election year, particularly a local election year, there's a great deal of unhappiness that spending priorities have included the erection of these statues. Now, the mayor has argued that the money for the statues has not come out of other funding, that it was set aside and originally for the erection of the statues, separate and apart from anything else. But I think the mood can be really gauged by the Itikwini ratepayers' protest movement by one Asad Ghaffar, who said they are an absolute waste of money. What value will these statues add when we have other more pressing issues, wastewater plants not working and street lights are broken? And I think it forms part of the problem in having any, shall we say, artistic or attention-grabbing item going up in a municipality that doesn't particularly, you know, it's all very well to commend or to celebrate sort of heroes of South African society, but it's just that, you know, to put up statues of people who've already sort of well commemorated seems fairly, you know, unimaginative, and the general response to it has been surprise and mocking their appearance in their wrapped up state as mummies for the time being, and there's just the. One of the residents has commented that erecting statues in an area where the homeless and the hungry seek shelter and food, and the ground around them reeks of urine and people lack even the most basic necessities like water and toilets, is absolutely absurd. It's basically that if anything artistic or festive really should be the function of private citizens or organizations, and the boring, mundane but necessary work of improving people's lives is really in the hands of the council. The EFF has also defended, you know, having maybe one, if not two statues, and the passage they've also perhaps, so somebody says, you know, if you're going to have statues, rather have statues of people that generally are pertinent to the area, to KZN, like KwaZulu-Natal, some commemoration to the Indians who arrived in Natal in the 1860s as indentured labor, and to get a sense that it is locally that one is supporting. One is not sort of just hailing the sort of standard obvious personalities and etc. So, you know, it really is a very strange. It is a really very strange thing to do, and at 9 meters tall, I mean, it is really an excess, and I don't think there's much. Sort of art sense in those who decided that this had to be done. Now, I'm looking at a research revealed by Professor William Gomedi of the University of Witwatersrand School of Governance, and he is talking about the fact that 47 connected individuals became multi-billionaires through BEE in mining. And we've talked about the fact that the ANC has doubled down on BEE at the very time when the whole idea of whether BEE should be scrapped and in fact is beneficial to society, when society can use all the skills of whoever is available to provide them, just doesn't, the two don't mesh. He says that despite black empowerment policies failing across Africa and devastating many economies, the ANC government has continued to implement these policies in South Africa. They fail to empower the black population and tend to drive away investments because most investments are required to cater for or include black people in ownership, particularly where people are reluctant to just give over the ownership. And this has mostly become very visible in the case of Starlink and Elon Musk's involvement. I think he's not averse to some form of empowerment or action that is not within the direct domain of the company, but which helps to train people into positions and give opportunities to people who could use it and may not easily get jobs. But the very idea of actually creating an ownership percentage, and I think in this case it was 30%, that has to go to essentially a government-chosen connected person, suggests that that black economic empowerment doesn't serve the purpose it's meant to do, which is to find ways to empower the broadest range of South Africans possible. And in his view, the best way to do this is through education. And Gomedi mentions examples where organizations adopt and fund schools to benefit from government contracts or assistance, and that in seeking education, there should be a strong focus on issues like science, technology, engineering, and maths to make sure that decent skills are gained.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
This morning I wanted to look at discussing an issue that is concerns local politics, because I read an article that concerned me, in that beginning of December, the City of Johannesburg Council voted to write off 354 million rand in irregular expenditure and 514 million rand in unauthorized, fruitless and wasteful expenditure as being irrecoverable, and that essentially the out of the two, a total of only 8 million rand would be recovered. And to this end, I've asked to speak to Councillor Xander Shaw, DA Councillor of Ward 18 for Ward 89, who was involved and present when that decision was taken by the City Council. Councillor, welcome to Chai FM.
Good morning, Sarah. Thank you for having me.
Councillor, am I correct that these seem to be very large amounts in both irregular expenditure and unauthorized expenditure? And perhaps I could just start by asking you what the difference is between irregular expenditure and unauthorized expenditure.
Okay, so just to clarify that, irregular expenditure basically means that it's money that has been overspent on the budget.
Mm-hmm.
So it means that money that was not approved by council was spent.
Okay.
So that's what they mean by regular expenditure. When we say written off, for example, I just want to make sure that I've got it right here. So
unauthorized.
Okay, unauthorized expenditure means that it was spent over and above the budget that was approved. Irregular expenditure means that the money was spent outside of financial control. So it basically means that proper processes wasn't followed when it was spent.
Right.
Like procurement processes, tender processes, all those kind of things.
Right. Can I ask, now it's, if I can just list the departments that were affected, were public safety, group risk and insurance services, and development planning. You know, I don't know, as I say, I don't know what these the specific departments do, but it just sounds like they're not in areas that go to the meeting the needs of people, of citizens having money expended to their benefit, to the benefit of their either the state of their roads or any other amenities that really people would be looking to seeing what the council would be spending for their benefit. The groups that I'm talking about, or the departments I'm talking about, are they sort of just internal departments that manage I don't know what? Why would the amounts, and would I be correct in saying that the amounts of that I've mentioned, 354 million and 540 million, are large amounts that would be regarded as irrecoverable?
So, yes, it is. It's outside the norm, especially for a municipality to have to write off or certify as irrecoverable or regularize such large amounts. So public safety, basically, and it's a very important division in this city, because they basically, JMPD and safety operations like the EMS and the fire department and all those kind of things.
Right.
And when they overspend on nearly half a billion rand, it means that, you know, it's money that hasn't been budgeted for by the city for that department. So essentially that money needs to come from somewhere. So either they're gonna write it off, but the money doesn't mean that it was just gone. It means that money needs to come from somewhere else. So they cut funding or budget from other places in order to regularize it. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that at the moment, you know, myself as a ward councillor, I'm experiencing a big lack of bylaw enforcement in the city, right? There's a lot of private companies that came up for fire and fire engines and all those kind of things. So what it essentially means is that while public safety is overspending nearly half a billion rand, you know, residents feel that in terms of the lack of bylaw enforcement and the mandate that they need to fulfill.
Right.
I mean, when you phone JMPD, for example, it takes them ages to come out, if at all. You know, the public parks that's been invaded by vagrants and people, you know, living in the parks, and you know, that all falls under public safety,
right,
and bylaw enforcement, and it's not being effective. When we look at GRAS, so that's Group Risk Assurance Services. Mm-hmm. What they actually do is risk management, assurance, insurance, governance controls in the city. And the problem that they had was procurement and contract management failures. So it's actually quite funny to say that the Group Risk Assurance Services failed to manage risk.
I mean, sorry, carry on.
No problem. Okay. I'm listening.
No. Just as it suggests that, you know, given the amounts of money and the crucial areas that they concern, it's almost it suggests that you're largely looking at, I don't know, is it incompetence? Is it inexperience? Surely there would be a better anticipation in terms of setting a budget for each year for these areas of what would be required, of what the problems that have come up in previous years suggest should be budgeted.
Yes, so to say that it's basically to the core financial mismanagement.
Mm-hmm.
because, I mean, if you have a budget, you need to stick to it. But there's so many different controls and everything that's being bypassed and overspent, and contracts that's being mismanaged in terms of no value for money being received.
Right.
And the issue here is that essentially money has been wasted because the departments and the city, or the departments that we're talking about, did not follow the law.
Mm.
You know, the MFMA is clear. It says there that you cannot spend what you don't have.
Mm.
You need to, you can't overspend on your budget, which has been approved. So the money that we're talking about is money that has been misspent outside of council approval.
Mm-hmm.
And the issue that we have there is that if that happens, yes, if we regularize it or written off, it doesn't mean that the money is lost.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of an accounting practice in order to regularize it, to say that we're closing the door on this, it's not recoverable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an issue if there's no consequence management or consequences or results from that, you mm-hmm. know, because in certain instances, MPAC recommended that cases be referred to SAPS mm-hmm. for crime misconduct. You know, there was in development planning, for example, there was EPWP salaries that was paid outside controls.
Mm-hmm.
It was a project that was done or paid for, but they yielded no results.
Right.
So that was literally a result of bad management.
Mm-hmm.
And it cost the city nearly $1.5 million, mm-hmm. which actually we actually recommended for recovery.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is that you won't be able to recover all the money that has been lost.
Mm-hmm.
And we as MPAC, we sit down and we decide and we say, right, and we scrutinize these reports, sometimes up until very late in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can put it there, is that, you know, the DA's position is very clear. So if you waste money, you need to be held accountable.
Mm.
You can't waste money and get away with it. And the just to come back to the third department that wasted money,
mm-hmm.
Development planning.
Right.
So what they do is they do building plan approvals and planning control.
Okay.
So that's where you get your building plans. It's the building inspectors in the city. Right. You know, those kind of things. And the failures of that, it deepens backlogs and upgrades to places like informal settlements, mm-hmm. Your building inspectors that needs to go out with illegal buildings and problem properties and all those kind of things.
Right.
And that takes resources away from that department in order to enforce the law, because mm-hmm. if they don't have money, they cannot go and enforce compliance in a court of law, because where's the money going to come from
right.
to do that?
Right.
So, to be clear, you know, the fact is that nearly R1 billion, you know, has been overspent and written off.
Mm. Is there a tendency, because I know I've seen it numerous times with the expenditure in the government sector, is a tendency to pay out large amounts, if not in the entire amount of a contract for services contracted before any work is done, or before a significant amount is work. In other words, instead of paying out on a sort of gradual basis as work is done, or paying out completely when work is finished, there's a tendency to pay the money out and run the risk that the services are going to be inadequate or not at all. And that seems to have been some of what happened to this in this case, in some of these cases.
So that's why it shows up as irregular expenditure or overspenditure, mm-hmm. because there are sections in the MFA that allows for over expenditure on the budget
mm-hmm.
or irregular expenditure.
That's the Municipal Finance Accounts.
Municipal Finance Management Act.
Right. Sorry.
So, you know, and this is very clear. It says there that in emergencies, and there's certain protocols that needs to be followed.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not mistaken, it's either Regulation 32 or Regulation 36 of the MFMA. So what it says that if there's an overexpenditure on the budget, for example, that a project needs more money, there's certain protocols that needs to be followed. What we see sometimes is that that regulation is being misused, and it's just being used for all the most of the expenses.
Mm-hmm.
So it results in a lot of overspendage and irregular expenditure. But that being said, is that that's why we as councillors have an impact committee. It's a municipal public accounts committee,
mm-hmm.
where we scrutinize these reports. And the fact of the matter is that when the city or the departments overspend it, residents doesn't see it as a accounting correction or something of that sort. They experience it as power outages, potholes, broken lights that's not being fixed. You know, the current state of Johannesburg at the moment, as we're experiencing it, is increased in power outages, water issues, you know, street lights not working, non-clean public spaces. And that is always a result or a symptom of money being overspent or wasted.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it's not in the budget, they need to find that money somewhere or write it off and take from other departments.
Right.
So you end up with very important departments that has less money to do what they're supposed to do, like infrastructure upgrades and maintenance and all those kind of things, which is lacking at the moment because the proof is, like they say, in the pudding. You know, see how many power outages just over the festive season has been. And then you hear and you see the symptoms, you can relate and say, right, okay, well, this is what the residents are experiencing because of overspenditure or irregular expenditure in the budget.
Yeah, I mean, literally driving into the studio this morning, it's all of those things that you mentioned that one sees are in a less than desirable state as a Johannesburg citizen. One literally saw robots, streetlights, the state of verges, everything is in care. And it's also aware of something as is with respect to vagrants living in parks and parks becoming sort of increasingly less attractive to walk through and to treat as a public amenity. What strikes me as interesting is you say that, you know, as are part of the process which manages to come to give account of what they've spent and how they've spent and why they've spent it. And you talk about that some people are facing the possibility of, if not, either disciplinary action and or criminal prosecution. Are these people who otherwise should, you know, they're not new in their jobs. They've been doing this presumably for a number of years. So why do we suddenly have a situation where you may have an area completely overspent or money's drawn from other areas in order to service these areas that are regarded as excessive irregular or unauthorized expenditure. What are the reasons why you've got this behavior? Is it repeated behavior? Is it something that suddenly sparks a suggestion that something that untoward something might be benefiting in an untoward manner from contracts of this nature?
Well, it's tough to say that it's repeat offenders or people that has been working very long or all that kind of stuff, because sometimes some of the people, they don't work for the city anymore with the reports that we investigate. Some of the reports, I mean, this I think this has this 800 million
yes.
has been over a number of years.
Okay.
It's not only in the last financial year.
Okay.
It's only public safety that was in the last financial year. It's 2023-2024. I might be under correction there, but that was spent in 1 year,
mm-hmm.
500 million, just mm-hmm. about 500 million. But the others were years before that.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes we don't see the reports, you know, the year after. It's reports that has taken a number of years to come through.
Right.
There's a massive backlog of reports that we need to go through, but we as MPAC, we're not receiving it from the city.
Right.
And without going down the rabbit hole, that's where I'll leave that, because I don't have the facts on why.
Right.
Yes, but I just want to like clarify something here.
Yeah.
So a write-off does not mean that the cash physically disappears today.
Mm-hmm.
It means council accepts the loss as irrecoverable.
Mm-hmm.
So it's regularized in the accounting process, and it's removed from future recovery expectations.
Okay.
So it means that the seriousness of it is that it closes the door on recovery.
Right.
So when council approves write-off or regularization, it kind of means that, you know, it's been investigated, the reasons are there, it's not recoverable.
Mm-hmm.
Because there wasn't maybe one specific person responsible for that.
Mm-hmm.
Might have been different aspects, different departments. So the spaces where we did recommendation and we did recommend, you know, the city manager or the accounting officer to take it further and open cases with SAPS,
okay.
and so forth, those were clear indications of, you know, mismanagement and, you know, where maybe possible criminal elements was involved, or, you know, so we tried to push accountability.
Right.
But you can't go and just do it all across the board,
right.
because a department overspent on their budget.
Right, right.
Even though we would like to, because they are breaking the law.
Right.
But what we need really in the city is proper consequence management and
right.
discipline.
Okay, yeah.
And if that doesn't happen, then this trend will continue.
Right.
Yes. Right. So as residents are really struggling, you know, they don't see this, like I said, as accounting practice to regularize it. They see it in physical service delivery.
Right.
They fight their way to work on potholes every morning.
Yeah.
You know, the DA is running a safari pothole campaign at the moment. So if you see a wild animal next to a pothole, then be sure that the DA has something to do with it. But that's just a bit of insight.
Yeah.
We're trying to bring attention to the service delivery failures.
Okay.
By not, you know, a bit humorous, but it's serious.
Mm.
Because the traditional methods or the way things are supposed to run is not working.
Right.
So we have to bring different creative aspects into the problem in order to make the entities aware, to say, guys, you need to pay attention
right.
to this.
Right.
But yeah, so we'll see what happens
right.
from there.
Well, thanks, councillor. I just intrigued having read the article about it and looking at the amounts of money and trying to understand to what extent it impacts us or not. And thank you for that input. Much appreciated.
No, it's a pleasure. Just a note, MPAC's going to be busy because the annual reports for the city is coming.
Oh, okay. So,
so
there may or may not be more articles.
Yeah, we'll have more to talk about in the future.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks very much.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
quite a startling statistic has been released recently that states that 15% of South African learners cannot read a word after 3 years in school. Now, the Department of Basic Education has revealed that in assessing 27,838 learners in 710 public schools across the country, they were measuring the percentage of children who reach key reading benchmarks and discovered that only one in three children achieved the minimum reading benchmarks in their home language across grades 1 to 3. So this effectively means that 2 million children are not at the minimum required reading level in the foundation or at the early stages, according to the panel that considered this. Now, the grade 1 benchmark is that learners can correctly sound out about 40 letters in a minute, and roughly 69% of those assessed were unable to meet this requirement. And that's not talking about putting together sentences, but really being able to pronounce, essentially to pronounce the names of the names of letters in a period of a minute. The grade 2 benchmark varies per language, so setting a requirement of 20 to 50 correct words read per minute, they found that 2/3 of those assessed have failed to meet this grade. Now, with the grade 3 benchmark, this increases the correct words read per minute requirement, obviously, and the benchmark ranges from 35 to 70 words read per minute, and the results have depended on the learner's home language. Again, 69% of students assessed in the department survey failed to achieve these requirements. And of course, the problem that happens here is if you fail to reach these benchmarks at these various early stages, these students are less likely to be able to access the higher order reading skills, the proper reading skills, and are unlikely to understand what they are reading. Of great concern is that the survey found that 15% of learners could not read a single word by the end of third grade. And this means that, say, in a classroom with 40 students, there could be 6 who are unable to read at all by the end of grade 3. Now, the survey found that students who were assessed who were most likely to reach the reading benchmarks are English speakers, reading in English. And it found that Gauteng and the Western Cape have a higher percentage of learners who reach the benchmarks than other provinces. A higher percentage of Tshivenda learners assessed met the reading benchmarks in grades 2 and 3, which is a greater level than of any other languages apart from English. And Tshivenda is used as a language of instruction, which makes sense that in the foundation phase it would achieve its benchmarks, and it's used in Limpopo and Gauteng. But as the medium of instruction in an area like Gauteng, the figure of children being taught in Tshivenda is less than 1%. It's about 0.4%. And obviously, those who come from higher socioeconomic circumstances tend to do better and achieve a better reading result, which of course raises the question and does raise the worry that what are teachers teaching and what are the what are the media that teachers are teaching from? Are the textbooks available in the different languages, and are they being, or is it something that the Department of Education needs to look at? And so it's a very worrying thing, because these don't appear on the face of it to me to be areas of that should be that difficult to attain if you have the correct materials and your teachers, you know, basically have the skills to do it. So why the number of kids who can't teach is so can't read after 3 years of school is worrying and does need to look at and see if we can ascertain more about it and what's been done and why what is the cause or the result of this.
IFM 101.9 megahertz of life.
There's been discussion over the fact that South Africa, either through Cyril Ramaphosa or Fikile Mbalula, have repeatedly criticized America over its involvement in Venezuela and taking Maduro and his wife to the U.S. to face charges of drug trafficking into America as being part of cartels as an attempt to destabilize America. And while one, it's fine to probably express some reserve about interfering in a sovereign state and what it does, you're looking at a situation of a country on the sort of doorstep of America. It's in the very north of South America, and it's has as its the countries with whom it identifies and seeks kinship with people like places like China, Russia, and Iran. And Iran has used Venezuela as a staging post for terrorist activities in South America, and with Maduro's interference in trying to undermine American society such that, to the extent that it is with regard to the provision of drugs, it just strikes me that that when you're a big player like America and you're going to want to, and it's not entirely unexpected or unreasonable for America to want to make sure that the countries on its doorstep are not a means for your enemies or your adversaries, such as Russia or China, to get input, to get an impact into your region, into the hemisphere. So it seems like South Africa is taking its testy relationship with America to levels by repeatedly pointing out that America had no authority to do what it did. And of course, the problem with Venezuela as well is that it has the largest oil fields in the world, which America would want to have access to. They can refine Venezuelan oil, but America doesn't produce oil of this kind. And so between that, the undermining nature of Maduro's regime and getting the influence of Russia and China out of the region, it seems like South Africa is setting itself in an unnecessarily antagonistic course with America, when in reality, probably as a country, we need to have a much closer relationship to America, because we probably as a country benefit much greater than we do from China, Russia, certainly from Venezuela. We have no benefit whatsoever. And it would be a particular affront for America to see Venezuela acting as a staging post for Iranian terrorist acts, given the very distinct and antagonistic relationship between America and Israel and Iran. So I think this is something that does present a problem for the GNU, is that the one area that the ANC seems to keep to its chest and talk without reference to its GNU partners is in the area of international and foreign affairs. And I think this might be something that has an impact on whether the GNU continues to run smoothly, because the DA has already called out the ANC for acting on its own in this regard. So I'm not entirely sure that that this is a course that the South Africans want to or should be continuing to pursue. Well, that's today's politics and related issues, and perhaps you can bring some have some comfort from the City Council that it does keep an eye on contracts entered into and expended supposedly on behalf of the city and for ourselves, and we'll continue to look at things that develop as they develop over the next week or so. Please, I would commend you to listen to carry on listening to Sarugon Rogue and to read my Substack, Sarugon Rogue, in which I present put forward articles, not sometimes my own, sometimes other people's that I think are worth reading, and interviews and such like, and certainly some of the interviews from Chai FM go up onto my Substack. So, ladies and gentlemen, enjoy the rest of your day and see you next week.